Rob Mosley joins us. Rob, thanks for coming by. What's up?
Absolutely. Here checking out the trophy. We're just talking about, like, is this, what are the biggest trophies to visit Eugene? There's been BCS trophies here. There's a Heisman Trophy, obviously, now, but this has got to be.
It's up there.
Yeah.
Do you geek out over this stuff like I do?
You know, I mostly came here because my buddy Joe Waltz,
he's
a big Cubs fan. I just want to see him geek out. It is cool, though. I was just taking a couple pictures like that. That's pretty awesome. But it's an interesting trophy, like in the pantheon of like major sports championship trophies. I don't think there's probably some people who wouldn't even recognize it if you said, oh, that's the major league, that's the World Series championship trophy.
That's a good point. Everybody would pick out the Stanley Cup, claret jug for the
Lombardi Trophy, probably.
The national championships, we all know what they look like.
But then you think about just the history, like the, you know, how far back the World Series goes, and the teams that have won, and the players that have won World Series titles. It's pretty awesome to see history like in the flesh, like that, so to speak.
I think it's awesome. We were just talking back in prior to the Wisconsin game in 2001. Was that like your first year covering?
At the Register Guard, that was probably the first year I covered games for the Guard. Yeah, 97 was my first game ever when Blake Spence went off against Utah and had like 200-something receiving yards.
Blake Spence, blast from the past.
God, I guess that would have been Jason Moss, or maybe that was 96. Yeah, it was forever ago. It was a long time ago.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, because the dueling quarterbacks, Ryan Perry Smith. No, Blake Spence, greatest trivia question for a sad Jets fan. They obviously, won the Super Bowl in 1968. They scored points against Oakland. Didn't make the AFC final till 82. Shut out against Miami. Made it back against Elway in 98. The only touchdown of that game, block punt, touchdown, Blake Spence.
Yeah.
Just in case you're on Sports Jeopardy.
Hashtag products.
So how are things going at practice? I mean, do you have to check your schedule every day, or is it 8:30 in the morning? Are they having practices at night?
Yeah, the first 2-3 weeks they varied it quite a bit, wanting the guys to get ready just to get going at different times. So yeah, we'd go at 8:30 in the morning. We'd have some 1-2 in the afternoon. There were a couple 7:30 at night. I'm getting old enough that there were a couple times we were out there at like 9:30, 10 o'clock, and I was starting to get a little foggy. Since this week, they kind of settled into a morning schedule. So they went Sunday night, practice that was open to season ticket holders and DAF donors. Took yesterday off, going this morning, Wednesday, Thursday morning. And then this is sort of a mock game week. So Thursday will be a walkthrough for like a game. Friday will be more their kind of fast Friday, like we've done here in the past. And then Saturday, they'll go through some sort of a game day procedure. And then next week again, it'll be morning practices, because it'll be morning practices during the season. So it was only the 2-3 weeks that they really varied them quite a bit. But today was a scrimmage, first thing out of the gate this morning. So that was pretty fun.
Now, I remember a year ago this week, we signed on to do our show on Friday, and the depth chart came out. And it was like, whoa, Justin Herbert is the backup behind Prukop. I mean, the MO for Coach Tags, whether at Western or South Florida, I mean, I know there's some guys, I think Jim Mora, UCLA, I don't put out a depth chart.
Right.
Is there an estimation of what we're going to see, kind of how all this is coming together?
Coach is being pretty cagey about that, and the media were trying to pin him down a little bit today on when it might come out and what it might look like. And, he's kind of joking that he's into a moving depth chart and a fluid depth chart, and maybe they'd find a way to make even the one that's published sort of fluid and moving. He's obviously a Jim Harbaugh disciple, and Coach Harbaugh plays his cards very close to the vest when it comes to depth charts. Doesn't like to put them out. Doesn't even have really a updated roster for Michigan right now since spring. So, we're kind of just waiting to take our cues from Coach Taggart and see kind of what he wants published when. Obviously watching practices, watching workouts, you start to get a sense of at least a practice order, a competition order, for lack of a better term. Whether a solid 2 deep will come out end of this week, early next week, we would plan to put one out at the game notes that come out for the Southern Utah game early next week. But again, we'll ultimately take our cue from Coach Taggart and kind of what he sees fit there.
As far as what we're seeing on the offensive line, you and I talked a couple weeks ago, I think there was a logic of the four redshirt who played last year, plus Crosby will be in there. But then you have guys who, you know, are kind of the forgotten names but played last year. Is there any rhyme or reason or a best guess?
That's been a very stable group.
Oh, really?
There's been a lot of movement other places. You know, part of the good news, the stability there is because everybody stayed pretty healthy. But basically, left or right, it's gone Tyrell Crosby, Jake Pisarcik, one of the guys you're talking about, who was kind of kept plugging along over the years and now is in a spot to start. And then three of the sophomores last year. Sorry, Shane Lemieux is the left guard, Jake Hansen, center, Pisarcik, the right guard, and then Calvin Throckmorton. So Crosby, Lemieux, Hansen, Pisarcik, Throckmorton. Brady Aiello, kind of the odd man out with Crosby back. Right. Aiello started last year at left tackle. There have been some times when Pisarcik moves down with the twos, whether to play center or guard. Throckmorton moves inside from right tackle to right guard, and Aiello plays some right tackle. So, you know, there are ways they can take advantage of all that experience, all that depth, and they've tried to turn Aiello into a more versatile guy playing both ends of the line. But quite a luxury going into the year because they're pretty healthy there. They got a ton of experience. And so that's a unit that looks pretty solid going into the year.
How about Herbert? I mean, obviously, at this point last year, the hope was he doesn't get in there. Prukop becomes another Vernon Adams. They win 9 or 10 games, and we don't even have this conversation.
Yeah.
But then you saw him when he was handed the mantle prior to the Washington game. You know, a personal observation, I guess his growth from November of last year until here we are last week of August.
You know, the thing that's always been so impressive about him is his poise. I mean, he plays like a veteran even though he's not. I'd have to go back and do the math, but off the top of my head, in the two scrimmages today and then the one previous in camp, he was something like 35 of 50 for 600 yards and like four touchdowns, no interceptions. He had a pass each day, the first scrimmage and today, that might have been picked off, coincidentally, by Lamar Winston in both cases. Winston got a hand on it, but didn't intercept either one. So Herbert doesn't have, you know, any turnovers in the two scrimmages. He's completing like 70% of his passes. You know, his yards per attempt, yards per completion are just off the charts with help from Dylan Mitchell, who's really looking like a good deep threat. But he had a couple plays today. You know, there was like a 3rd and 10, and he's got a roll out. He's rolling to his right, throwing on the run, and just puts a laser right into Kenai Benoit on the sideline. Benoit turns upfield, gets like 17 yards, moves the chains on 3rd and long. There was another play that was like a 3rd and 8 where the pressure comes, and Herbert doesn't roll out, but he kind of takes a couple steps in the pocket to kind of readjust himself, realign the pocket, avoid the pressure, checks down all the way across the field, sees Jake Breland streaking toward the sideline, hits him right before he steps out of bounds. Again, moves the chains, conversion. So it's not just now that he's as efficient and mistake-free as he's always been, but he's creating these plays when, you know, when the pressure's on. You know, you saw a little bit of his poise late in that Utah game. And a flash of what he could be with pressure on, but he's starting to look like a guy more and more who just is completely unflappable. Sure, there's moments that are probably going to get to him here or there, as they do for even the best of players, but he sure looks like a guy that's ready to have a breakout year. He's, in my opinion, really, really underappreciated nationally. There's a lot of quarterback talent back in the Pac-12 and across the country.
Too.
But, you know, he's a pretty good player who I think deserves to be in the conversation with some of those other guys.
I remember in the preseason, I think it was one of the Pac-12 guys who was talking with Coach Taggart about, you know, the difference between a quarterback running out of the spread where he's got to make the decision as opposed to a design. Has that been something that's been pretty noticeable?
In terms of Herbert running the ball, I mean, that threat's going to be there. I think what you're going to see with this offense is a little bit more designed option stuff, even triple option stuff. They've made no secret of the fact they intend to play two, even three backs, just to take advantage of the depth there. Because, well, I mean, obviously we know about Freeman and Benoit and Brooks James. The fact that you have Royce Freeman coming back and also your offensive MVP and Tony Brooks James kind of doesn't make sense. But, you know, the depth there is so good returning that Taj Griffin could be moved to slot receiver where he's going to be really dangerous. But then these freshmen that have come in, Darian Felix looks like a really electric player. C.J. Verdell is small but tough as nails, kind of like in a LaMichael James mode. And then Cyrus Abibilikio had a touchdown today. He got the first down for the number two offense against the number one defense just by pounding away at the front seven and just second effort, you know, tough to tackle. And then scored their first touchdown when he took a little pass in space and then had room to run and ran like 30 yards for a touchdown. So he's got some speed too. You know, he's not quite as quick in small spaces as Verdell and Felix, but just a big guy who can run too. So much talent in those backup running back spots. And they want to take advantage of that. So I think you're going to see a lot of those guys on the field. And yeah, so more designed, you know, like I say, option, triple option type stuff rather than what we're used to seeing, which is just pure zone read.
Right.
That's really the only situation in which you see the quarterback run.
Well, what I'm hearing is, and you hear Taggart talking about it, the best 11, this, well, somebody's got a red shirt. So there's going to be a bit of a reality check for somebody coming up in 6 days or something like
that. Yeah, you look at all those running backs and think they can't possibly play all of them. You know, I mean, Darian Felix looks like a guy who could return punts. So if he is in the mix in that regard, maybe you use him, and maybe Hibby Velikio or Inverdell can be afforded to be redshirted. But again, they're going to play so many of those guys now. You know, it doesn't look like too many freshmen are in the mix on special teams, where you usually see them play their way on the field. They really are using a lot of veterans in special teams roles, with the exception of like a Thomas Graham who got here in the spring and has been so lights out. He had another interception this morning in the scrimmage, just a big time playmaker there. So I'm really interested to see how that figures. And I think Johnny Johnson, true freshman receiver, made a bunch of big plays Sunday in the open practice and then had a real big play in the scrimmage today. I mean, I think he's probably played his way into the two deep. Daywood Davis, I'm not as sure. That's a freshman we might be able to see redshirt. But the running backs, yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. It feels like you can't play six running backs, but I just have a hard time even ever watching 4 weeks of practice trying to guess at who they would hold back.
And on the other side of the ball, there seemed to be a logical order in the secondary in particular. Well, first of all, the guys you talk with and the fact that they went from all those years, one coach, John Neal, and now they've split it between the safeties and the corners. That seems like an interesting dynamic and something we haven't seen here.
Yeah, and I think where you really see the impact of that is in position drills. You know, they do practice is mostly 7-on-7, 11-on-11, special teams drills, things like that. But there are 4 or 5 periods every day of fundamental technique stuff, position by position. And so what you see now is Keith Hayward has got the safeties and Charles Clark's got the corners, and they're doing different things. They're off each on their own, you know, whereas the DB group used to be all together as one, kind of doing the same things. I can't claim to pay the closest attention to exactly the fundamentals they're going over in each drill, but clearly they're doing different things specific to that position group. And so, I mean, I can only make those guys better. Those guys can only benefit from that, from really getting work specific to their position group. The corners, you know, Arion Springs had a huge spring. Ugo Amadi, I think, is a guy they thought finished April on a high note and then carried that over into camp. But Thomas Graham has just been a real consistent presence. And again, when the lights have gone on in the two scrimmages, he's got a turnover in each scrimmage. A really impressive safety. I'm not sure how things are going to play out there. They've had some guys banged up. Some guys have been in and out. There's been a lot of rotation, a lot of trying out a lot of guys, a lot of different combinations. Obviously, they felt good enough about the position they could move Brendan Schooler over to receiver.
Right.
I think, you know, they're doing that because they think he can be a guy who's in the two deep. But just how things will line up the first game or two, that's really hard to predict. Safety and D-line, I think, for me, are the two spots where I'm just not 100% sure how all the different pieces are going to fit together and in what order.
Yeah, I know it sounds almost a little bit arrogant, but I think, again, with the way last season ended, and you don't want to – you know, I always say I could be dismissive of anybody. I'm not a coach. I'm not a player.
Right,
there ain't no bulletin board material. But having that Southern Utah game to start before Nebraska, it almost seems like logic would be like, this will be an extension. Now we'll see how you play, even if against them it's a different colored jersey.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, you have a guy like Scott Pagano who's coming off an injury.
That's another thing.
You know, there's no pressure to really rush him back and make sure he's ready to play 80 snaps in that game. You know, you get what you can get out of him in that game, if anything, but you don't feel like you have to rush anything in that regard. Or you can try, you know, if things in the coaches' minds are even a little up in the air at safety, you can try a bunch of guys and try a bunch of combinations in that first game, hopefully. I think this offense is going to be able to score on anybody, almost pretty much anybody in the country. And so you'd like to think this will be a game where they can really put a bunch of points on the board, get a nice cushion, and then be able to try some different things out.
You know, one of the things that a couple of people have actually asked me, we hear about tempo.
Yep.
And I remember when Kelly took over and then Helf took over, and he was like, we want to even go faster.
Right.
In describing Coach Taggart's style there, is it just always to try and play to optimum speed or just situational? We want to play fast, but it doesn't always have to be a million miles an hour.
Yeah, much more the latter. You know, I think, you know, you look back in 2009, 2010, for all the ability that was on that Oregon team, I mean, it had to play fast to get an edge on other teams
that
maybe were deeper, or, you know, even some teams that maybe had a little bit more talent. But certainly that were deeper. But, you know, they by playing fast, Chip Kelly really could mitigate that and even the score, or even give his guys an edge. You know, I don't think they feel like they have to do that here now. Plus, it's so common now to play with tempo. Teams are used to dealing with it, and defenses have got a little more variable, so they can deal with whatever you throw at them without having to substitute quite as much. So I think they and we've seen it from time to time when they want to ramp it up, it's apparent. But that's because on the other side of the coin, they don't always feel the pressure, I think, every snap to feel like they have to go fast. You know, I think last year, you know, the offense really got away from being able to play with tempo, you know, partly because some of the quarterback issues, even the last couple years, you know, with some of the quarterback issues and some of the chemistry issues there. But, you know, when they want to, they can go fast. And like I say, it's apparent they are, because on the other side of the coin, when they need to like milk the clock or slow it down, they're more than happy doing that as well.
And lastly, I've been harping on for years, you could point to the playmakers at linebacker for the best Oregon teams, best Oregon defenses. You know, Joe Walker and flashes, but for the most part, it just seems to have tied into what's been lacking. Who on that side of the ball at that position has kind of jumped off the page? We're like, he might kind of be a throwback, you know, 3 years ago.
Somebody asked me the other day who I thought have improved the most since last season and even since spring. And I said the corners, because I think since last season, that cornerback group, partly just because of the addition of Thomas Graham, has really taken a step forward. I think his arrival really lit a fuse for some
really?
Of the veterans too. But the outside linebacker group, Jonah Moy and Justin Hollins, just look really, really impressive right now. And even the guys behind them, Gus Cumberlander and Bryson Young, a couple of young guys, whether they're used in a pass rush package or as backup guys, they're long and pretty athletic, and they can wreak some havoc too. So I really think the outside linebacker group is ready to have a much more impactful presence this year than it did last year. Inside, and that's despite the loss of Troy Dye, because he moved inside.
Right.
But inside, he's far and away the guy. I mean, I think he's as important to this defense right now as Justin Herbert is to the offense. Just, you know, they're far and away the guys at those spots.
And sophomores.
Yeah, and
it seems like they were
true sophomores.
Yeah.
But Troy Dye is just a guy who, you know, he's a leader. He's a prominent voice, and guys respect because he's a playmaker. He's long, but physical too. I mean, just around the ball a lot, got the instincts. You know, if he weren't available inside, I'd really worry. You know, I think in Kalanapelu, who great story, just got a scholarship, but a smaller guy. AJ Hodgkins, a smaller guy too. Jimmy Swain has shown flashes. But in terms of consistency, Troy Dye is just that guy in the middle. There are a couple of true freshmen, Samson New and Isaac Slade, Matautia, who really look like they've got the instincts. They're going to need to, you know, reshape their bodies a little bit over the next year, but I think they're going to be really, really good in the next year or two, and might have to even play a little bit this year. But I think you're really going to enjoy watching Troy Dye in his move inside. And then really enjoy watching those outside linebackers be disruptive. Today there was a play in the scrimmage. Jonah Moy's blitzing off the edge, puts up a hand, bats a ball at the line. It flutters straight up into the air, back down into his arms, and he heads upfield with it. So, and he had a pick six in a practice. It might have even been the first scrimmage. So he might have had a pick in both scrimmages too. That just a guy who's ready. Sometimes you see that with a junior college guy,
right,
where it takes a year to kind of get used to it, and then as seniors they really take the next step up. Him and AJ Hodgkins will both be looking to do that, and Moy certainly looks poised to do that this year.
Do you ever find yourself reciting this in your sleep?
Yeah, I think about this stuff a lot. So if you're one of those kooky, crazy fans who's doing that, believe me, I'm right there with you. Because, yeah, I'm thinking about the Ducks a lot.
One last thing, completely not related to football. You're a big Dodger fan.
Yes, sir.
So what are your memories of 88, which is a while ago? And because this has graduated to ridiculous.
Well, I have kind of a funny memory of that because game one of the 88 World Series, it was the 1 year my family lived down in, we lived outside of Pasadena. And we lived outside of, so we lived in the area, got to see some Dodger games. But the game one of the World Series, I had done something, so I was not allowed to watch TV. But I, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area, so I was an A's fan in the American right. League, and then the Dodgers were the family team. So A's, Dodgers, I mean, I made a...
Were you middle school?
Yeah, it was in seventh grade, I think.
Okay.
So I made an emotional appeal to my mother. I realize I've done and screwed up. I can't watch it on TV. Can I at least be, like, in the room if I watch the game with my back to the TV?
Oh, my God.
So I could be with everyone watching, experiencing the game. She was okay with that. So as far as I remember, I had my back to the TV when Gibson hit the homer in game one off X.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
By the way, my glove is so old, it's a Valenzuela.
Beautiful. Right-handed glove, though. So,
I know. Yeah. It's very odd. It was given to me as a gift when I was 26 years old.
So his preferred model, though.
That's awesome. Hey, Rob, talk about stopping by on the fly. Appreciate
it
very much.
Happy to do it. Anytime.
Enjoy. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, man.